And we are back with episode 838 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville. Third show, there must be a lot on TV this week.
Well, we actually got deep into a couple shows last time, and I figured that it just made sense to break it up. But that's okay, because we're used to putting out three shows, and, you know, maybe they're a little bit shorter, like this one I think will be. But I think that, you know, coming in, usually it seems like every other week these days, it seems like it makes sense to do this. But we left off somewhere on Sunday night. As
yes.
We went through our list of shows. But before we go further into Sunday night, why don't you go ahead, Gary, and give the disclaimer again?
Yes, as we discuss Sunday nights as well as Mondays and Tuesday shows, we might talk about plot points that have been revealed, things that have happened, love that's been found or lost in some cases, and some other details of the story which you might feel constitute spoilers. We don't apologize, but just ask that you bear with us to listen to our insightful commentary that we feel would be diminished if we excluded some of those topics.
That's right. And we are going to pick up, let's see, where should we go from here? I'll just bring up that list, he said, as he was buying himself time, because he can't find there it is. I cannot find the tab. All right. So the next one I'm going to talk about here is another one that takes place in the great unknown, and that would be Star Wars Rebels. And Gary, first of all, before we even get into the show, what do you think of this whole thing where they seem to be spooling these episodes out two at a time?
It feels like they're burning through them on purpose for some reason that I don't know and I don't necessarily like. While it's fun,
I really don't like it myself.
Well, I mean, it's fun to get the content because I enjoy the show so much that I would really want to you know, see more and more and more. But at the same time, the rate they're burning through it, and I know this show is... coming to yet another end because the mouse has decided that they need to do a kiddie show again, as if they didn't learn their lesson the first time.
Is
anyway,
that really their reasoning? What are they going to replace this with that's so kiddie?
Let's see. They're supposed to do I shouldn't say kiddie. Perhaps that's not the right, best word. I know there's a female-focused show in the works, where they're going to be anthologize like Rey and
I
other.
I had already been spooling out, but maybe I'm wrong.
If it had, I hadn't seen that yet. But I know that for some reason they don't want to continue with what I will call at this point adult fare cartoons for Star Wars. I don't quite understand why this series, as well as its predecessor, continue to get critical acclaim. Well loved by most of the fan base. Even with the shaken up universe, they're making every effort to sort of stay true to continuity in either case.
If I may just add one thing to that.
Yes.
The people who don't like Rebels right now typically cite the injection of kiddie humor into the episodes as their reason why they don't enjoy it. And so I really find it interesting that Disney may be saying, but we need to appeal to the kids. They're not the audience. I hate to tell you, they're not the audience.
Well, you know, this is on Disney HD, you know, XD, which is a preteen channel.
Well, let me put it this way. Maybe, just maybe, we need to give them a little credit. I know. That the news that Rian Johnson, I believe is his name, who directed The Last Jedi, is being given the reins to a new trilogy.
Yes.
When it's being taken place, we don't know. But it's going to essentially... there's also going to be a Disney streaming service, because, you know, everyone has to have their own now, that will be supposedly headlined by a live-action Star Wars TV show, a la the Marvel shows. Which, by the way, if a Marvel series is not already on Netflix, any new ones that are not already part of the Netflix deal will be showing up on the Disney one. Yes. So Disney is doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on the idea of having their own streaming service, affordable, they say, but who knows, with new live-action fare for Star Wars. So is it possible that they want to split, shall we say, the audience between the kids that want to see an animated show in their own mind and getting the more, quote-unquote, as you called it, adult storytelling into the live-action show? It's possible, I think.
Well, I thought that's, yeah, I don't think you can't service both audiences at the same time. Oh, and I think there's overlap.
With you.
There's overlap, too. And, you know, one of the original reasons they killed Clone Wars was to move it to a Disney station in the first place.
Yes, I know. And to be honest with you, I'm not saying I disagree with you, but I am trying to put a silver lining on what is a kind of disappointing situation. At least this time, Rebels is being given the ability to, finish.
Yes.
I don't think that Clone Wars ever really got.
No, they didn't, because we had to stream the last three episodes that were never shown in the first place because of they cut it so abruptly.
Right.
But regardless, I'm still happy that this property is around. If they know it's coming to an end, so I have every confidence that this time around, Mr. Filoni and company will give us a good happy ending that will most obviously to me end up right at A New Hope. So at least I hope it does. It really should. So I'll just wait and watch. And yes, I will miss Chopper and Sabine as much as the next person, maybe more. But I'll just enjoy it while it lasts. And yeah, I wish they would spool it out a little bit slower. Maybe some more people would pick it up along the way and appreciate it. But at this point, it almost feels like they've decided to kill it, so they're pumping through the episodes just as fast as they can.
Yes, and that is the reason that I brought that up, because it's really disappointing to me that they felt the need to do this. Not only that, but I feel like I'm losing the depth of what they're trying to tell in terms of the story, because it just feels like they're rushing through it.
Well, yes and no. I mean, in some ways that most of these double episodes are not, I would not call them complete standalone, as
there is that too.
A lot of them connect up, if not with the second half of the hour, so to speak, even with the ones before it and after it. This continues to be a serialized drama, and virtually none of the episodes, I can't think of more than possibly one or two, you could really say would be standalone. Almost all of these are telling a continuing storyline going forward. So even putting them together, I can't say, oh, geez, why did they smash those two together? Because they fit pretty well is my usual answer to myself. But so, I'm mixed emotions that they're running through it, but at least they're not playing all 10 of them on a Sunday night at 1 a.m. So.
That's true. But that being said, we've got 4 episodes, therefore. We have Season 4 Episodes 5 and 6, which are The Occupation and Flight of the Defender. And then we have Episodes 7 and 8, Kindred and Crawler Commanders. So, yeah, the first one, the first duo, as you say, is kind of them on Lothal again, dealing with a new prototype TIE fighter, which would be the Defender, TIE Defender. And, so what did you think about that double act, I guess you could call it?
I like their, what's the word for it? Their own commentary that they keep getting drawn back to Lothal, it is where the show started off, of course, and they all came together, but they keep seeming to get called back there. And, I thought that's sort of a nice sort of, comment on how everyone has stayed together. And while there's been some growth, it still feels like the family's just there intact and enjoying themselves helping out the rebels as they are. So, so there's that. As far as the TIE fighter scenes, I guess this is one of those things where they say sort of injecting some kiddie humor to some extent, where they're fighting off the different the ships and jumping on top of ships and that type of thing. But that's a lot of fun. I thought it was nice to see the I don't know if it's more of a cameo or not, but to see Thrawn again back into it. And while I'd hope he'd have somewhat of a bigger role, it seems like it's diminished somewhat. So it was nice to have him pulled back in. Gosh knows he's better than the Jedi Hunter interrogators, Inquisitors, a lot better villain than them. So I'm happy for that. Still scratching my head about what all these cats are doing, and I'm wondering if there's some deeper significance that I don't quite get with the Lothal cat. But maybe they'll tell us before the series ends. I liked it a lot. It made sense. I don't understand why they were having. Geez, why they get so little backup from the Rebel cause? I guess they're trying to show us how stretched out it is. Perhaps that they couldn't get a ship to go pick up the parts off the TIE Defender by anyone else except for them to try and find another repair their ship to get off. It seemed a little odd for something that was such high priority that they couldn't get some extra assistance. But this is typically is a small cast crew, so that's not that surprising. Also, we got to let's see. I don't want to mix up all four of them together, but I guess. We got to see some old friends on the mining vehicle. Oh, what was his name? With the horns. Do you remember, John? The guy with the horns.
Not off. From the third season?
Yes.
I remember that he was played by Tom Baker. I don't remember his name though.
Anyways, but their friend with the horns with one side lopped off turned out to be on the mining ship. So.
No! Completely different guy. Then I'm really. No.
Oh, okay.
I know what you're talking about, but I cannot remember his name at all.
Anyway, but it was nice to see them bring back some an old character back again, and I'm really hoping before the season's over we get to see Hondo again. But that's a whole other story.
You like him so much more than I do. But anyway.
Oh, jeez. I do. I admit it. But anyway, no, it's nice to see them. You know, this is a well-oiled crew at this point, and even when they have unexpected things come up. They're handling it with much more grace and finesse than they did in the earlier seasons. You get the sense that they're, a well-functioning, polished crew, and they are nowhere near the neophytes that we started off with, not knowing anything or being able to sneak through and not get captured along the way. So I really like it. I can continue to enjoy Ezra's acquiring and use of helmets. I'm sure there's some running gag going on with the actual directors and the writers and stuff
required by the end to have worn every helmet that has ever shown up in any incarnation of the franchise.
Yeah, I get that feeling like they got a checklist. Okay, has he worn one of those Deathwalker ones?
He's going to end up one of the Knights of Ren just so that he can wear Kylo Ren's outfit. Anyway,
it's a little running joke I'm sure that they put together. But I don't know why, but I'm still enjoying it. So that's always fun for to see him in a helmet.
I do have one question for you.
Yeah.
Because I'm actually rather thankful that they've brought this back, considering that it disappeared for a while. What do you think of how they're treating Kanan and Hera's relationship?
I was going to get on to you. Beat me to that. Yeah, that's very interesting because it existed early on. And sort of went away, especially as he started to tutor Ezra more, that it just sort of faded away, some of the intensity of the missions were increasing, and it just, I don't know if they didn't have screen time for it or just felt it was a distraction or didn't want that kind of deep emotional connection running through the show as an ongoing thing. But I guess, as they're reaching the end here, they said, screw it, and we're gonna go right back and put it in again. And I think it's natural. I find that they play well off each other as characters, and I'm happy to see it personally. I'm sort of curious how Kanan's Jedi upbringing training is not in any conflict at all with this, even though, of course, there is no more Jedi Order. You would think when you've been trained from birth to at least roughly young adulthood, I guess maybe Kanan was, to adulthood, I guess, in Kanan's case, that you wouldn't still have some prohibitions or hangups about, any type of romantic relationship. And I wish they had at least touched on that because it seemed to be somewhat of a significant thing in the Star Wars universe when it comes to Jedis. So I wish they had discussed.
I hate to say this, but my read on this, especially also then the this whole thing with the Lothal cats.
Yes.
Is that I think they're setting it up for Kanan to be a sacrifice before the end of the season. And that
I hate you, John.
Hera goes on because we know that she is around in at least Rogue One, I believe.
Yes. Well, we know the ship is.
We know the ship is, and I thought that they said that when they make a reference to Sinsala or Captain Sinsala that they were actually talking about her.
Okay.
So, but it would not surprise me then that because there aren't supposed to be any Jedi around, that bodes badly for Kanan and even maybe Ezra.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we know, of course, at this point we have to accept that Ahsoka is gone, which is unfortunate. But I think that's where they're going with this, is that I think that the whole, because they kind of Crawler Commanders, had the revelation that of his real name, and that's what they thought that the cats were saying.
Yes.
And I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I think he is fated to sacrifice himself, and I think that they're tuned into the Force in such a way that they know and they're preparing him for his role. in some fashion, some metaphorical fashion. But that feels right, even though I hate saying it.
You should.
But there's really no reason to bring back a relationship that they kind of feel like they abandoned unless they're going to make it tragic. So I'm not, you can hate me all you want, but I feel like that actually would make for an amazing end to the series, is to almost mirror in some senses Rogue One and the amount of sacrifice that we saw there, and to have at least enough of the crew remain for the ghost to be part of that battle. But I feel like it would be almost too much to ask to have the entire crew survive to the end. Just my opinion.
Well, at least you didn't say Chopper was going to die, so I suppose I can let you live. Oh, anyway.
All right, let's
go ahead. There's circles for people like you. Anyway.
Fifth or sixth, I can't remember.
Yes. But anyway, so regardless, they're continuing to knock it out of the park. I don't think we are hitting perfect tens, but we're still pretty high up on this show, 8.5s and 9s. And so they're doing a great job. If you love Star Wars and you haven't listened to our advice yet, what are you waiting for? This, it's like getting a new movie every week, guys, especially with them doing these doubles.
Absolutely.
go watch it.
Now, the next one I'm going to bring out here is, and hey, we are both watching this one. I wasn't entirely sure. The Walking Dead, Season 8, Episode 2, The Damned, and Episode 3, Monsters. Now, I think that we're... Yeah, I would say that it's safe to say that we're still giving credit where credit is due for the things that the show is doing well, but I think we're also concerned that there is a certain amount of staleness that is creeping in. Would that be a pretty safe way to put it, Gary? Because I see that you gave it a little bit lower scores than I did.
Well, that was for... I have issues with one of the characters, and
well, go ahead and throw it out there. We don't have to get in extreme detail with it. I'll explain what I mean when you're done talking about what your issue was with one of the characters.
Okay, and I've never been good with names. The character with the pike.
With the pike, Morgan.
Morgan. I don't understand his rationale. I don't understand What is going on with him? Did somebody hit him on the head and I missed it somewhere during one of those fights? Because it seemed like he turned a left into back crap crazy, and I just don't get it. I understand everybody's heated up over the whole battle and stuff like that, and he was just, it's an odd dichotomy when you're shooting everybody, you know, right in the head, and then you turn a corner and you go, oh no, you can't shoot these 30 people though, because it's sunlight. I don't know. I don't doubt that he's got issues, but when it continued to grow and fester and become where he was,
getting into
having difficulties accepting Jesus.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And, good way of putting it.
Yeah. Just struck me out of left field and it made no sense to me. And it definitely did drop my score for Monsters entirely. And there's a bit of we've been fighting groups for a while now, or they've been fighting us, and I don't mean to say that this wouldn't exist, or in real life, this probably wouldn't go on for months, if not years, but it just, in the purpose of storytelling, I wish they would move further. When I say that, I will say for people who have read the comic books, I don't need it to go too far ahead at this point, but I would like to see them move past this, interhuman fighting again, and go to something else. I don't know if it's having to deal with zombie riots or hordes or maybe even a whole lack of supplies or capacity in some way, that they're eking out existences because the plentifulness is over. But it just seems like the show needs to take a turn, maybe not a sharp turn, but just something different. They've made every point I think they could possibly make it with human versus human violence. And I would like to see the storyline advance, and it's not.
Well, I definitely see your point. I mean, there are issues with the story arc that they are trying to, adapt. And one of them is that they are trying to find a clever way to adapt this, but that also gives them the flexibility that they like to have in terms of letting members of the cast off for significant periods of time. The problem is right now, I think that you put your finger on part of it, they are amping up the conflict between characters in such a way to that it makes no sense. Jesus and Morgan should never have gotten in that fight. And they only did that because they have to, I think, in order to keep things, in their mind, keep things interesting. And that's because they're not doing a great job of adapting the all-out war. Frankly, I don't understand the scope of it. Where are people in relation to one another? What does going to this place mean to the people over here? We've never actually heard the plan, let alone see it. All we see are all these random interactions and conflicts, and it just doesn't gel. I don't know what anyone's doing.
Yeah.
And it really takes a lot away from the whole, you know, impression of what does this story arc mean? I don't know what we're seeing every episode and how it all interrelates. And so it's hard to know, like, well, does it make sense for them to have this philosophical battle? Because yes, you kind of set it up the previous episode, but then it went directly to 11. And that's the biggest problem I have with this season so far, is that we never got a clear explanation of what's going on. All we see is all this conflict. And it's like, great, but what does victory look like? Where, you know, what these characters over here have a mission. They've mentioned having a mission. What is it?
Yeah.
Just tell us. Put it on a map even for a few seconds. Like, hey, we need to take this position here so that these reinforcements over there don't get what they need, or something to that effect. And it would have really played better, I think, if they had done something like that. Because they've done that actually before. I remember early in the third season where they were trying to find refuge, and they literally pulled a map out of a car.
Yeah.
And said, here's where the herd is. This is where this is. We're stuck in the middle. And it's like, okay, that makes perfect sense. Now I know what you're doing. But I also feel like you kind of said it, they're retreading the same ground over and over again. They need to do something different. And unfortunately, the adaptation going where it is, it's stuck in this mode right now. They are changing things up, but in fact, some of the changes they're making, I think, actually don't work as well as the original, and the original had issues. So
Yeah, this was a bad section for the source material, if I recall correctly.
Yes, it was rough, because it felt like it was padding out the story. And avoiding the obvious conflict. So it feels like that's what they're doing now too. There's a lot happening. It's just, it would be more exciting if we knew the context. Moving on to Monday nights then, and perhaps better, or at least more varied ground. How about Supergirl season 3, episode 4, The Faithful, and episode 5, Damage? So why is it showing me the,
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I saw that too.
These two episodes, so we have The Faithful, of course, was where there was a cult that was essentially worshipping Supergirl.
Yes.
And then Damage was actually a really solid episode about the aftermath of the second season finale, and really delved into Lana Luthor a lot more.
Yeah, she got a lot of character time, as well as we got to see the increased mustache dangling of Morgan Edge.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So, again, above average episodes.
Yeah, thank goodness, Kara stops pining after Mon-El for an episode or two, and they get better. That's, wow.
Isn't it amazing to think?
I know, it's just incredible. I was waiting for it for her mourning period to break, and it obviously has. So I was very grateful to see that. And by no means am I saying you can't still ship her and Mon-El all you want, but it was just there's only so many times you can play the same record and have viewers. So I was glad to do that. This was a very interesting episode with the Faithful and the Church of Supergirl, if you will. My personal favorite was that be one of the enlightened or higher up people within this community, or even to be part of the community, Supergirl had to save your life. So people were putting themselves at risk so that she would save them. I guess there's crazier religions out there, but that sure seemed a little crazy to me. So that was an interesting little twist to put on all these people who were believing and following her. And then there was also that whole little Kryptonian connection with finding the crypt. Was it? I don't know what that thing was. Was it a ship, a probe?
Yeah, it's unclear to me, but it seemed like a probe of some kind.
Yeah, and whether it's related to this mystery ship that's down on the bottom of the lake or river or ocean that they keep flashing us back to as it shifts and turns around. Just teasing the heck out of us, I guess, to know what it is. But we'll have to wait and see on that, but that is happening. And I thought it came off well. The actor who was playing Coville was very believable and fanatic without seeming insane. You can be a fanatic but not quite come off as completely out of touch with reality. And I thought he did a good job of balancing that. He was still crazy, but at the same point, he wasn't Looney Tunes crazy to hit the Warner Brothers note. And so I thought they balanced the writing of the character well. And while still crazy, it made it easier to believe what they believed, or at least understand what they believed, and how he could gather other people around. So I liked it a lot. I thought it was a strong episode. And that one was good, and the next one was also had some strong points as well, John. What was your favorite parts about Damaged?
Really just the fact that, you know, we've had all this back and forth about whether or not Lana is actually a good character or a bad character in disguise and so on and so forth. I just think that her character grew leaps and bounds here. And really showed a lot of different angles where it's like, at the end of the day, I actually really do believe she's trying to do the best she can. And she's just playing in a world where she has to be ruthless sometimes. She's a corporate leader. or was. Maybe not so much now. I feel like Morgan Edge was maybe a little over the top, but he always has been. So it's not like I'm expecting him to suddenly show subtlety. But I just really liked the idea that this is what people do. This is what politicians do. And playing that game a bit in the Supergirl world where it's less the social issue of the week than it is kind of showing a different angle of things that are reflected in real life. Also, I believe that this was the episode that was the end of the Alex and Maggie relationship.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I figured as much. Yeah, it really tugged at heartstrings, to say the least. The playing of the song at the end their last goodbyes, I guess it would be a polite way to refer to it, was very touching. And you see them, and they're both at this sort of impasse, and it's sad because we've seen the relationship start from nothing and grow, and not only grow as a relationship, but grow in people finding their own sexual identities. And so we feel like, we've been there during this whole process, and then to see it reach this wall that can't be overcome is, it was a very sad, touching thing. And I felt both actresses did an excellent job with it. And now we understand why she's not back the whole season this year, quite obviously. And I thought it was very well done. It was respectful of something that I really didn't consider as a same-sex issue, but I was enlightened to realize that it really was and is an issue about having, deciding about having children or not. And it's sad when it happens like this. I wish I sort of questioned how it didn't come to light earlier, but it's sad that it got that far along that they were ready to, get married, and that became the stumbling block for everything.
Well, what I got the sense of is that the circumstances actually exacerbated the discussion. And but what I did like about it, as much as one can say, hey, I really like this story about two people breaking up, is the fact that it happened in such a relatively quote-unquote mundane reason. Like you said, they didn't play up the fact that this was anything specific to a same-sex relationship. This is something that all couples struggle with. And any couple could break up over is whether or not they want to have kids. And in a world that is, that is, has a Supergirl and has these metas and has all this, these Kryptonian villains and stuff going on and corporate intrigue, what brought them down was a very human moment. And difference of opinion, that it's like, yes, they love each other, but they just can't get over their differences on this. And I felt like it was really treated well in that respect, that they could have come up with some bizarre, very, you know, insulting reason why to, you know, as a same-sex couple, they had to break up. Other shows have done it very poorly in the past. They could have come up with something that was comic booky that drove them apart. They could have killed one of them off. They didn't do that. They took the high road.
Well, they took the harder road, yeah.
The harder road is probably a better way to put it. They took the more realistic road, which on a show like Supergirl is a very strong and compelling choice. So I applauded the way that they did it. I mean, obviously, it was not the easiest storyline for a lot of people, I think, that it hit home. But I think it was done very well. And so that, along with what I felt was some really good character work for Luther, made this a really good episode. And really, both of those episodes did something that Supergirl wasn't doing last year, which was delving into aspects that aren't the, you know, social justice headline of the week, which really got kind of over
preachy.
The top.
Yeah.
Preachy, yes. Because there's kind of a very, you know, it didn't do the Star Trek or the Orville way of doing it. It did the beat you over the head kind of way of doing it. So I thought that they did a much more nuanced version of storytelling so far this season. Really, the only episode of Supergirl that disappointed me a bit this season so far was the one with the Martians, because I felt like it was too far afield of what we could kind of grasp onto. Those of us who weren't super DC fans, anyway.
Yes. Well, even those of us who were, it was so far out, honestly, and removed from what the core of the show is, that it seemed out of place.
Real quick, there were a couple episodes of The Gifted, which I continue to really enjoy. There was episode 5, Boxed In. And then there was episode 6, Got Your Six. Both of them are good because they are moving away from having the parents of the, you know, the Struckers be kind of naive and idiotic to actually recognizing some of the mistakes they've made in the past, and they're making proactive decisions to make up for that. And it really makes the characters more sympathetic. Then we have The Flash, season 4, episode 4, Elongated Journey into Night. And episode 5, Girls' Night Out. We both seem to have given these fairly good marks, maybe a little bit lower than, say, Arrow or Supergirl. But Gary, would you agree, because it seems like as a team we are kind of giving this above average or higher, Flash has found its comedic roots again.
Yes, yeah, I think we both complained about the long season of Savitar last year, and the imminent death of Iris overhanging the whole season, that just really sort of destroyed the whole vibe to the show, no pun intended. And so it was nice to see that we've put that in the past. We've also, I believe, to some extent reconciled Barry's mourning/loss over his parents. Has been somewhat resolved, or at least not at the forefront anymore. And so we've put two severe events behind us, and I think it's freed everything and everyone up. Now, don't get me wrong, we still have issues. You know, Caitlin still has issues that she's dealing with. And even Barry, to some extent, is still sort of finding his way, almost in a newbie sense. Now that he's back, it feels, it does feel fresh, and that it's not a tired old routine at this point. So, that's nice, too, that feels like it's brought back.
Yeah, absolutely. So I felt like there were some amazing comedic points in these two episodes. I laughed pretty hard. I mean, granted, Gypsy's father, Breacher, was way over the top. Danny Trejo is always pretty over the top these days when he does comedy, but I feel like it worked really well. And it was just kind of goofy and fun. Everything about Dibny was pretty fun.
As I said, that this is yet another piece of that sort of Detroit,
yes.
Justice League that they continue to pull into this particular comic books. It's kind of interesting that this team now has, I believe, almost complete representation now. That,
yeah.
Between Gypsy, Vibe, the Elongated Man now, the only Commander Steel, I believe the only person we're actually missing is Aquaman. I don't think we will ever get to see him.
Probably not.
And if we did, please let him be the blonde-haired version. But anyway, so that being said, you know, it's almost complete. So they're going to throw him in there at some point. I am convinced.
Maybe.
Because it's the only one left. They're going to make some sort of reference at some point. Regardless, I feel that they've that as you said, to have an episode like this whole father hunt thing was definitely a thing to their roots, and that we're not worried about discovering who killed somebody, avenging somebody's death, preventing someone from getting killed. You know, all that kill. They've moved past that. We're worried about who hired the strippers for the night out club. We're worried about Vibe trying to sort of prove his worth, while he was hunting after him. I still never had the sense that he was actually going to get killed.
No. But this feels so much more like the first season, in my opinion.
And that's what this show was supposed to be, the antithesis of Arrow, and it was supposed to be that light, upbeat, forward-looking show. And they lost it last season, and yeah, I agree with you. It feels like it's come back.
Now, the only problem that I had with Girls' Night Out, to be honest with you, I mean, any episode that is going to focus that much on Caitlin is going to get my vote. I'm predictable, guys. Katie Sackhoff as the villain.
With the accent, yeah.
Amunet. Oh, wow. Yeah, that accent was special. In ways that should never be attempted again. And it just kind of took a little bit away. I think I would have given it the 8.5 that you did if it wasn't for that. That kind of held me back.
And it's a shame because, you know, I think if they skipped the accent, it would have worked a lot better.
I think so, too. Especially since it was just a really fun episode. I mean, Barry Drunk was a wonder to behold.
Yeah, what was in the...
I don't know, but man, that's got to show up at Dragon Con sometime. Okay, so the last show on the list, and this is the one that it just surprises me to say that when I watch a show like Inhumans and I think to myself, surely this is the bottom of the mediocre barrel. There's actually a show on the list that I am done with, and you're pretty close, it seems. Legends of Tomorrow, How Far They Fall. There were two episodes during this period, season 3, episode 4, Phone Home, and then there was episode 5, Return of the Mac. As I said, I've given up on it.
Yeah, I can understand why it feels like it's wandering aimlessly with nowhere to go, and they don't even know what to do with half the characters anymore. It's they sit there on the ship and talk for a while, and then three of them go out and fix something, and then the rest of them all come back together to punch out 20 people at the end.
Yeah.
Next episode. Oh, and same thing.
What's going to be the jokey nostalgic reference this week?
That Ray Palmer will make. Yes, I know. Yeah. So, what would you, I guess, I don't want to dissect this anymore because it's painful. What I will say is, what do I want to see out of this? We had them with a clear goal in the first season. We had, is it that Rip isn't around anymore?
No, I don't think that's it at all.
Is it that Smart's not around anymore?
That doesn't help. And the fact that he's going to be gone, two of the best things about the show are going to be gone soon.
He's been gone. I don't know. There was an article out how he was leaving. And I was like, I didn't know he was still there.
Right. Yeah, that is true. But yeah, you know what it is? Last season, I felt like, especially towards the second half of the season, they found this perfect balance between absurdity and sticking to what existed in the larger DCW continuity. And what it really felt like they did was they broke it. They went even further with the absurdity to the point where you can't even reconcile this being in the same universe anymore. And once that happened, I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, once I stopped trying to kind of enjoy this being the goofiest part of the DCW and just not even being able to see it as being part of it, I just lost my interest in it. I think it's like you said, they have this formula and they churn it out. There's no goal. I don't feel like there's a goal anyway. If there is, it's the most tenuous goal possible in order to let them do the biggest variety of comedy. And frankly, Flash is showing them how to do it right now. I think in the absence of a show that was doing the comedy right, because Flash was too busy trying to be Arrow, now that Flash has kind of gotten back to its roots and is doing much better, I think that this show is trying too hard. And there's no balance, it feels like maybe some of these people aren't coming back because they also feel the fact that the show lost whatever balance it had. And to me, it's just it's extraneous. There's no joy in watching it. It was becoming a chore. And that's and we made a pretty clear statement, even though we do try to at least stick with certain things, like, hey, you know, Inhumans was only 8 episodes, no problem. But when a show is starting to feel like work watching it, it's time to cut it off. And this show isn't working. I really feel like they expanded too far. They need to bring it back in.
Yeah, when the I thought they would be founding the Time Bureau or whatever the heck you want to call it, versus Rip peeling off and forming it on his own. I would have loved to seen them going around making it, you know, creating it. That, I thought that would have been a good season or so, and it was just pulled out from under us. So
yeah, right now I just don't see why they need to be there.
Yeah,
it's a completely extraneous show. Go back to just having Arrow, Flash, and Supergirl, and that I think is more than enough.
I hate to say it because I really like to think there was potential, but yeah, you're right. Yeah,
especially if they're going to be doing like I think you mentioned it. Maybe it was off the air, but Supergirl is really going to start incorporating some of the kind of characters that you would have almost expected on Legends of Tomorrow, like more of the Legion of Superheroes.
Yes, so besides announcing Saturn Girl, they also announced Brainiac 5 casting. So yeah, the Legion is Legion character 3. So
yeah, there you go. So
can a time bubble be far away?
Sorry. Basically, they're doing, you know, the whole idea of them being able to explore, or Legends of Tomorrow was the show that was going to allow them to explore other corners of the DCW. Well, now those shows are doing perfectly fine. You don't need Legends of Tomorrow to be going to other alternate universes because, well, Flash does that and is doing it pretty well. Supergirl is one of those other universes, and she gets to go all over the place in seeing other characters these days. So think about it though. Initially, Supergirl wasn't part of the DCW. So that's why, you know, Legends of Tomorrow was, and it was able to fill that kind of corner. Now it doesn't. So yeah, all these reasons I feel like, nope, it doesn't feel like it's part of the universe. It doesn't make sense as part of the universe. And other shows are doing things that show could have done better. So for that reason, I think it is just, it was time for me to cut it off. And you know, you gave the one episode that you did watch, you gave below average. So I think that we're kind of in agreement that the show has lost its way.
Yeah. Oh no, definitely. Like I said, they have no purpose. And I'm not even saying that I need a serialized show where every, you know, standalone episodes would be fine. At this point, I almost think I'd rather see a jumping from time zone to time zone solving problem issue again. episodes again than what we're currently sitting through.
Yes. Well, that brings us to the end of our episodic discussion. And as is often the case these days, when we really get to just let loose and talk about these shows, we go at length. And so we got two solid episodes of episodic discussion. So I hope everyone out there enjoyed it. Programming note, it does seem like we are all busy this fall. I will be away, as I mentioned earlier this week, I'll be away this weekend at Anime NYC. I don't know that I'll be back in time to record, so we'll see, but because there will be a bit to talk about, but we'll see if we have episodes. But certainly the week after that is the Sunday after Thanksgiving, so there will be a little bit more flexibility, perhaps.
Yes.
But
oh, good. I'll have time to mainline Riverdale after all. Yeah.
There you go. Maybe so. So yeah, I would definitely plan that it would be at least, or at the most, probably 2 weeks from now. And if we do get fortunate, or we do wind up doing it, we'll have a few episodes in between. But yeah, these days, right now, it seems like it works really well for us to have every other week. And then, of course, we're coming up on the holidays, and the holidays, we usually, at the end of the year, have a brief, a little bit longer hiatus. But, yeah, we'll see how it pans out. But thank you, Gary, once again, and thank everyone for listening, and until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth. on Twitter at Critical Myth or Google Plus under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.